I'm going to shift gears a little bit for a talk. So if you are driving a car and you're going in reverse, going backwards, but you decide that you actually want to go forwards and you have a manual thing, you have to pop it out of reverse first. And I guess it goes through neutral before you put it into first or something to drive off. But you have to kind of stop going in reverse first and to shift gears. And then you need to put it into first or put it into a forward gear to go forward. The four right efforts can be understood by this analogy, that if you're going in a direction you don't want to go, you have to first disengage from that direction. But if you just leave yourself in neutral, there's a lost opportunity. Because if you just pop it out of reverse, you're probably not going to go forward unless you're pointing downhill. And if you're pointing uphill, you're going to keep going in reverse. So there has to be a shift. There's not enough just to let go of where you're at and going to neutral. There's also moving forward. And one of the things that I learned to do, one of the primary things I learned to do in my years of monastic life was to let go of the directions that weren't so helpful for me to be in. So to let go of my attachments, let go of trains of thought that were not helpful, let go of the moods, of emotions, let go of motivations, impulses, let go of tension. I learned to let go a lot. And learning to be present. And I learned how powerful it is to be present and to be really fully present. And some people say present is kind of a forward gear, but being present, letting go and being present is very helpful. But one of the surprises for me of being a parent to young children is that letting go and being present is often not enough. And this has been a little bit of an insult to me, or I don't know if insult is the right word, but it's been somewhat of a, you know, it's like, you know, not the way it should be. I spent years letting go and being present, and that was enough. And that's not enough. There's all this problem solving has to go on. If I just sit down and be present with my kids running around screaming, you know, it probably helps a little bit. And certainly presence is really important, and being able to let go is really important, but it's not enough. You have to offer something. You have to figure out what to do. You have to kind of muster up a certain kind of attitude or approach. Sometimes you have to be strong and firm, and sometimes you have to kind of know when to be loving and kind. But even the emotional kind of reaction that I bring to my children has to be considered. There's problem solving. What's needed here? And it was supposed to be easy, this practice. Just let go and be present, right? In this particular situation with parenting, I've seen how important it is to cultivate helpful states of mind, helpful attitudes, helpful efforts. And it takes some effort to do that. So to let go and be present is kind of like making a blank slate. And with that blank slate, you could do something. You could then paint the painting, or paint whatever you need to do, or make something out of that. Or you could just not do anything. And sometimes not doing anything is blissful. It's great. But it's also, at times, a lost opportunity. And it's a lost opportunity to move our life in a helpful way in a certain direction. So if you want to drive a car, you have to do more than just get out of reverse. If you want to go to the Grand Canyons from San Francisco, you have to do more than you get into reverse, pull out of your driveway, and then you have to get out of reverse in order to just kind of keep going. But you can't just get into neutral. You have to have it, you have to kind of get it in forward gear. But then you need to drive skillfully. It's a long way to the Grand Canyon, and you need to develop and cultivate skillful driving habits if you want to arrive there in a peaceful, happy way, in a way that's supportive of certain intentions to live a peaceful life, a happy life, a liberated life. So if you drive at 85 miles an hour, weaving in and out of the traffic, and you're surprised that you arrive at the Grand Canyon exhausted, then, you know, you shouldn't be surprised. You know, it has to do with your driving. You weren't driving in a way that was helpful to arrive in a settled, peaceful way. There's a way of driving which is helpful for your purpose, and a way that's not helpful, the way that's helpful for others. And so you can take some responsibility for how you drive. And that's a lot of things you can take responsibility for. You can take responsibility for the actual physical way that you drive, you know, the speed and care that you take as you drive. You can take responsibility for your attention, how careful and full your attention is in the driving. You can have the cell phone and the DVD player on at the same time, you know, and kind of just occasionally looking out the window as you drive. That's not, you know, how much attention you give, or you can have a conversation, or all kinds of ways of not giving your full attention to driving. You can, there's choices you need to make about maybe your mood. Your mood affects your driving. And some moods, if you're angry, or if you're irritated, or greedy to get there in time, or certain kinds of moods, certain kind of feelings that don't allow you to drive with great clarity. You need to take responsibility for your motivation. You know, what's your motivation and how you drive? Getting there as fast as you can maybe is not the best motivation to have. There's a whole series, sometimes all the different ways in which human beings can engage in activity, physically, emotionally, motivationally, your thinking, even what you think about maybe is important. If you spend a lot of time lost in fantasy, maybe you're not driving very carefully. So you have to curtail or hold back a certain kind of thinking so that you can really stay present for what you're doing. So when we drive, I think all those come into gear, come into play. But most of us, we don't think about it so much. Maybe it's more innate, or, you know, we just, you know, it's kind of obvious we need to do it, or it certainly doesn't seem like a spiritual practice to do that. It just seems like, oh, you know, I should drive in a way that's helpful or careful or not, and then take responsibility for what happens if you're not doing it that way. So if you understand how this applies to driving, the same thing applies to other aspects of our lives, including our inner life, our inner sense of well-being. If you have a direction you want to go, there's skillful and unskillful ways to go there. So if what you want to do is to go to attain some very deep possibility of peace, or enter into a kind of develop a certain kind of spiritual capacity for peace, compassion, love, liberation, variety of things, generosity. In Buddhism, those are kind of considered a package. If you want to move towards that package, then there are skillful ways of moving towards that and unskillful ways of moving towards that. If you spend your time lying, stealing, harming people, you're actually going in the opposite direction. It's like driving to Seattle when you're trying to go to the Grand Canyon. So we have to learn to let go of those things which are unskillful, which take us in a different direction. A lot of this has to do with the fact that in Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis that our actions, our activities, have consequences. Every activity a human being engages in, unless it's enlightened activity, has consequences. So, not just consequences in the world, kind of the external world, but has consequences for our inner life, for our inner sense of well-being. So if we lie, we think, oh, I got away with that one. I did a quick lie and I got away. That was nice. I got out of trouble. And maybe in the immediate moment you got out of trouble by lying, but there are consequences in your psyche, in your inner life, that lying will have. And sooner or later, those consequences will bear fruit, will flower and show themselves. It can be as subtle as creating a very subtle habit, make it easier for you to lie the next time and easier the next time. It could be that it lodges someplace inside of you as some kind of tension or holding. And at some point, as you get more free, that holding gets revealed. You say, wow, I have to deal with the fact that I lied 20 years ago. That's still lodged in there. I can't get further in my spiritual life without looking at that. You thought you got away scot-free. But sooner or later, if you're going to be a meditator, sooner or later, things will catch up to you. And so you have to look at it. So, things have consequences. Our activities, all our activities have consequences. So, in Buddhism, there's a very strong emphasis to begin taking responsibility for our activities, for our actions, and their consequences. And what's amazing in the teachings of Buddhism is how subtle activities, what subtle activities are included in activities. Even your thoughts are activities. And you can just let, some people just let their thoughts kind of wander freely whenever way they want. But there's a skillful and helpful way of taking some responsibility for the direction of our thinking. That, or our motivations, our impulses, our reactions, our moods, our feelings. All these things are activities, human activities, and we can either just let them kind of do whatever they're going to do, and in a sense be a slave to them, or in a sense kind of be an automatic pilot, or we can start taking responsibility, taking our seat in the driver's seat, rather than being a passenger. I know in some spiritual circles, the emphasis is more like you're in the passenger seat, and there's someone else in the driver's seat. And you can just kind of trust the driver. In Buddhism, there's no one else to drive your car. You as a driver is not the whole picture. There's the engine, and the gasoline has to go in, and there's other things going on that contribute. But you are responsible for your activity. It's like no one else is going to pee for you. Right? You're waiting for some, you know, other driver to do it for you? There are certain things you can only do for yourself. And so taking care of your activity, what you do with your life, the endeavors, the efforts you make in your life, is something that you can or cannot take responsibility for. And so Buddha says, take some responsibility for it. So letting go is important. Letting go of unskillful, unhelpful states. And that's what we've been talking about the last 2 weeks. And then, what today is, take responsibility for cultivating and developing wholesome or skillful states. States of mind, skillful activities, skillful efforts. To have some sense of what's skillful, you have to have some sense of where you're going, what your goal is. Without some sense of a goal, or some sense of purpose, or some sense of direction, you can't really talk about maybe what's skillful and not skillful. So if your goal is to be peaceful, or if your goal is to be helpful, or friendly, or to be safe, or to be whatever it might be that you have as your goal, then you can answer the question, what is it that's helpful to attain that, to do that, to make that possible? In Buddhism, the fundamental goal are two. The Buddha gave two paths that you can follow. One is a path towards happiness, and the other is the path towards liberation. And the two are separate, but not distinct. There's a tremendous overlap. The things you need to do in order to create conditions for a happy life are very much the same conditions you need to do to create a life of awakening or freedom. And so the Buddha listed a whole bunch of things you can do and cultivate to help make it more easy, possible to become, to cultivate both. The first thing he said you cultivate is generosity. To cultivate your generosity. Now, don't just cultivate giving. Giving is just giving. Giving is an activity. But cultivate an inner state of generosity. When you give, see if you can do it in a generous way. Generosity creates conditions for happiness in the present moment and also in the future. Or give in such a way, cultivate generosity in such a way that it produces happiness. If it produces bitterness, don't give. But figure out some way to be generous so it brings some joy to you. It also helps with having the ability to let go. Generous to me means you give a little bit more than expected. So there's letting go that happens, a releasing of attachments, which is a skillful thing to do. And the more you can let go, the more you can release, the easier it is to be free or happy in the future. cultivate an ethical life was very important for the Buddha. So live in an ethical way. Then cultivate, be careful with your thoughts, with what you believe, with your views. Look carefully at your cognitive world. Take some responsibility of it. What goes on in your mind regularly? What are your common thoughts, beliefs, opinions that you carry? Are they useful? Are they not useful? How do you engage with your thoughts? Do you ride your thoughts really close, really tight? This is really important, kind of caught by your thoughts. Or can you cultivate some ability to let go and be loose with your thoughts, kind of light with your thoughts? Can you change your thoughts at will? Do you ever thought, oh, that's not useful to think about, I'll think about something else? Or can you think deeply about your thinking to see what is it skillful here and what's unskillful? To spend a lot of time with blame, blaming someone else for your problems, is like giving up your driver's seat. And it's a waste of time to spend a lot of time blaming. Discerning where the some responsibility is important. But you can never blame someone else for your inner state of mind, your inner state of life. You should take responsibility for your inner state yourself. If you spend time blaming, you've stopped taking responsibility. So to see that, see how the mind works, not be tricked by it, not be fooled by it, and turn and look inward where the real work needs to be done around your mood and your mental state. What needs to be done here? What does it take to cultivate some helpful emotional states? We put a lot of emphasis in Buddhism on cultivating loving kindness, goodwill. You can have a certain amount of goodwill in your life, that just who you are, you carry it around with you, and sometimes it shows up and sometimes it doesn't. You don't know quite why. Certain people you have and some people you don't, and you don't know quite why, or you have some idea. And it's fine. What we say in Buddhism is, don't just be content with your innate capacity for goodwill, whatever it might be. Stretch it, expand it, cultivate it, develop it, so that you can have goodwill towards more people and more beings. So you cultivate that capacity. You'll be a happier person if you cultivate your capacity for goodwill, for friendliness, for loving kindness. And cultivating loving kindness is a condition that helps the mind become free. It's a lot easier for the mind to release itself, to liberate itself, when it exists in a field of kindness. Also, it said that loving kindness, compassion, also can be developed, that both those qualities of mind tend to create clear seeing. Rather than making someone Pollyannish, it tends to make you can see more clearly what is really going on than if you're seeing through the filter of anger or resentment or stinginess or something like that. So to see more clearly, take some responsibility for how we see, the view we have of this life we live. One of the remarkable things is to how we look at other people. Do we look at other people as threats? Do we look at other people as judging them some negative way? Or can we look at other people, can we see their beauty? Do we see their ugliness or do we see their beauty? As if we really are the judge of their ugliness. Who knows? But, that person shouldn't be doing that or whatever. But it's a waste of time. Certain kind of way of judging other people is a waste of time. Is there a way that's not Pollyannish, that's very realistic? We actually looking and cultivating the ability to see what is beautiful in people, what is wonderful, and then relate to that, speak to that, draw that out of them, support that. I've been the recipient of people who've done that to me, and I'm just blown away. You know, I'm just doing my thing, you know, living my life, you know, maybe I'm grumpy or something. And then I see this person who's a friend of mine, and it's really clear this person is seeing something really nice in me. And pretty quickly, you know, I feel pretty good. That's nice, wow. Or the person reminds me, oh, remember, oh, you know, you're, you know, reminds me of something I've done in the past, or somehow I'm with that person. Or one friend of mine tells me, not so irregularly, he says, oh, I'm just happy when I think about you. So he sees certain things. Sometimes I can't see in myself. So can we can do that to other people too, right? Oh, have you told someone? Oh, when I think about you, you make me happy. Isn't that nice? I mean, don't wait for someone to do it to you. It's a waste of time. You have better things to do, more skillful things to do with your time than waiting, you know? No one said it yet. If you have any interest like that, go find someone that you genuinely feel makes you happy and just say that to them, you know, oh, you make me happy. Or when you did that last week, you know, last week I felt happy, I left and spending time with you was happy. I think it cultivates the wholesome, cultivates skillful, cultivates a sense of goodwill, cultivates a sense of happiness, or creates conditions that are very different than if you go around gossiping or slandering people. Imagine, you know, every time you saw someone, you knew that when that person talks about you behind your back, they're just saying good things. Isn't that great? As opposed to worrying, you know, what is that person really saying? You know, or maybe you're that kind of person. Let me tell you, I got this great bit of news. Let me tell you what I found out about. You know, it doesn't make people feel good. A certain kind of vitality comes with sharing gossip. But I think it's a waste of time also. You can rather say, oh, gossip, I think, you know, it's kind of derogatory things or kind of. But you can say, oh, you know, I saw my friend, you know, so-and-so, and I was really happy. That person just makes me happy. Can you believe what the person did? The person was kind. And then you hear through the grapevine, they're talking about you out there. They're talking about how kind you are. So to cultivate. So what is it that you could cultivate? So what is it you can develop? And the idea in Buddhism is that it's a practice that we cultivate and develop over time. Any skill that you want to have, it generally takes time and ability to cultivate it. And the other day, I was at a pizza place with my son and another family, and they had this pizza this menu for kids, you know, little things you can draw and little puzzles they do. And they had a small little Sudoku puzzle for the kids. And I'd never done Sudoku before. And I was trying to make sense of it. And it was really easy for kids, right? But I couldn't. And then the other parent took it in front of me, just 1, 2, 3. And so now, the last 2 days, I've been doing Sudoku at home. And the first day I failed. But yesterday I figured it out. And you get the hang of it. It's a skill you develop. You can know how to. So, you know, you hang in there. So I could have just felt bad about myself forever, right? Oh, you know, I did a kid Sudoku I couldn't do. Oh, you know, I'm so dumb. That's an unskillful state to be in. But I kind of grappled it. Okay, I'm going to deal with this thing. This nemesis of mine. I'm going to deal with it, you know, and try to cultivate, develop a certain skill. So I was there with the numbers and figure it out. So we can develop ourselves. And it's well worth, when you get into neutral, once you figure out how to let go of reverse, when you're going, your life's going in the wrong direction, it's a huge, wonderful thing to get into neutral. It's great. And in fact, what Buddhism says, to offer mindfulness, to cultivate mindfulness and presence, is a skillful thing to do. Mindfulness and presence is not neutral. So I might have been a little bit not emphasizing its importance enough earlier. But when you get kind of to neutral, don't just coast. If you coast and your car's going uphill, you're in trouble. See what you can do to cultivate what is the best in you. See what you can cultivate, states of mind, states of heart, wise understandings, wise views, wise approaches, wise motivations. See what you can do to cultivate and develop it. Look in different situations. I like to say, like when I used to have a date book that I used to write my to-do list in, and for a while it was my practice to beginning of the day to look at all things I had to do for the day, all the different appointments and stuff, And then imagine or think about what was the intention that I wanted to infuse with each of those things. Get over it as quickly as I can, you know. No, not that at all. But it was, okay, when I go to the supermarket, I have to go to the market, it's on the list. Let me see if I can be in that market in a way that I can cultivate a little bit more friendliness to the people I encounter there, to the clerk, for example. That's my wish. Rather than just be neutral in the supermarket or get out of there as quickly as I can. And so to infuse our life with skillful intentions, skillful motivations, motivations that are helpful for us and helpful for others, is one way of cultivating what is wholesome. I don't think it's Pollyannish to do that. I think it's very realistic. It's very realistic to realize that the human heart, the human mind, is malleable, shapeable, it's developable, it's cultivatable. It's phenomenal how much the heart and the mind can be developed and cultivated. It's a phenomenal instrument. It's a phenomenal tool. And to just leave it as it is not only a wasted resource, but it's also it's a lost opportunity. And if you take that opportunity of cultivating yourself, figuring out how to do it in a wise way, down through time, you'll get a lot of benefits, lots and lots of benefits. So I end with my two of my favorite analogies. I apologize if many of you have heard it before, many times maybe. It's my favorite, right? So the first is, I like to do yoga. And I heard of a yoga teacher for whom the students couldn't get into a certain posture because they couldn't stretch far enough, like get their hands down on the floor in some way. They would pile up these telephone books. And they'd say, okay, you do this posture every day. And every day, tear out one telephone page. One telephone page in the telephone book is very, very thin. It's not going to make much difference. However, if you do it every day, you know, there's only like 400 pages in the telephone book, right? So after a year, year and a half, you're down to the floor. A year and year and a half seems really far from today. But in a year and a half, it's now. And you'd be so grateful that you prepared yourself, did the work to get to that far. So that's one analogy. It is a small bit of difference done regularly makes a huge difference. And the second one makes the same point. If you take two parallel lines and nudge one of them ever so slightly apart, so they're not parallel anymore, it might take a long time before they start diverging. But eventually they start separating, you see the separation. And after a year or 100 miles or further, they're actually quite distant from each other. A small choice today, small choice that seems to make very little difference now, but it can actually make a huge difference in a year, in 5 years or 10 years. And I think having a perspective that your spiritual life is not only about here and now, but also about the here and now you're helping to create in the future, is a very important perspective to have. So I hope you all enjoy your here and now. And the here and now that's going to happen in a few minutes out there, then and there, is going to be a potluck. And you're all welcome to stay, whether you brought something or not. And one of the skillful things to do is to spend friendly time with your spiritual community. And this is one of the ways to do that.